marriage, the good, the messy, and the beautiful. I'm going to be drawing on this book that I wrote called Men, Women, and the Mystery of Love. Out of all the books I've written, I have to be honest, this is the one I get the most feedback on. It may not be, I've had other books that sold really well, like the Who Am I to Judge book was like number one on Amazon last year, the Walk Through the Mass, when the new Mass translation came out, sold a lot, but this is the book I get the most feedback on. Like people email me roughly once a week, different people from around the world. There are married couples who say, I wish that we learned this when we were first married. Young couples who were dating and said, this book confirmed that we're meant for marriage. I have to be honest, I've had many young people tell me, this book confirmed I'm not supposed to marry that guy. I've had that as well. And it's not my ideas. This isn't really me. This is all JP2. It's taking his wonderful wisdom from Theology to the Body and his earlier work, Love and Responsibility, making it very accessible for us because there's such rich gems I know I need in my own marriage and family life. And I want to open this up about how we can apply this to marriage. So how many people here are married here in the room? You got a number of married folks? How many single people do we have here? Okay, single people, this book talk is for you as well. So because all the principles we're going to learn about love can be applied in friendship, in other relationships. And there may be some young single people here too that hope to be married someday, so it can give you a vision what to look for. But I am going to give examples from marriage in this talk. I want to talk about, first of all, some of the challenges we face in living out marriage. Pope Benedict has a beautiful, beautiful little reflection in about marriage where he talks about the wedding at Cana, like we just did. But he uses this example. He says, when couples fall in love, and that's easy. It's easy to fall in love. It's a lot more challenging over time to grow in love. Like, you didn't have to work really hard at, oh, I have to fall in love. Oh, I just want to fall. It just kind of happens, right? That's why it's called falling in love. But growing in love is a lot harder. And he uses this analogy from the wedding feast at Cana. He says, you know, at Cana, there was that first wine. That first wine, it was really good. That's why everybody kept coming back and drinking it, and they ran out. So it was really good wine, but it couldn't go the distance. It wasn't enough to sustain the feast. And what happened is Jesus had to come into that marriage. Jesus had to come into that wedding feast and then bring the new wine out of the water. And that's what Pope Benedict says. And this is the key I want to make sure I get here, right here with all of you. It's the foundation for what we're going to be looking at tonight. Is when we fall in love, we just can't wait to be with our spouse. We love our spouse, and it's so wonderful. But that initial spark of attraction, that initial love that draws us in, is not enough to sustain a marriage. If we just want to keep relying on, I want to get those warm feelings back, I want to get that romantic emotion back, those rush of feelings, if I'm searching for that, that's never going to last. Those things come and go. But real love is about allowing Jesus to come in and meeting us in our relationship and transforming that initial spark of love into something deeper, something richer. Here's a quote from John Paul II about this. Listen to this point. God, who called the couple to marriage, continues to call them in marriage, in and through the events, problems, difficulties, and circumstances of everyday life. We all get that idea that, well, God called this man and woman together in marriage, right? We've thought about that before. God called this couple together in marriage. They come to the altar, they leave, there's this big party. God brought them together. But do you in your marriage relationship realize that God is continuing to call you in marriage, precisely in all of the difficulties, events, problems, and circumstances of everyday life? You see that initial spark of attraction? God called us together, like the first wine. But then when you're like 5, 7 years into your marriage, maybe 17 years in the marriage, there's problems and challenges and hurts and difficulties. And we could think, oh, this just isn't what I signed up for. This isn't as great as I thought. Why is it so hard? But it's precisely right there in the midst of all that crud, in the midst of all that messiness, that Jesus wants to meet you. It's Jesus right there saying, are you going to love? Are you going to love me in your spouse? If we're called to the vocation of marriage, It's all those challenges in marriage. That's precisely where God wants to do his greatest work in our lives. This is where God wants to mold us and shape us and change us. Yes, he wants us to go to the Eucharistic chapel. Yes, he wants us to pray the rosary. But if you're called to marriage, the place where this is a sacrament, he's gonna encounter us in the midst of those difficulties. Marriage is the number one place that God changes us. It's the school of self-giving. You know, it reminds me, a friend of mine, I remember we were in graduate school together, and he got married over the summer. We come back after the summer, and I said, "Hey, how's marriage?" And he went like this. He just put his head down and shook his head. I thought, "Oh, what's wrong?" And he goes, "Ted, I never realized how selfish I was until I got married." How many of you can say that? Right, you knew you were selfish before, but then all of a sudden you're thrown into this with other person, and now, wow, I realize how really selfish I am. And by the way, my friend, he said that before he even had children. Children have a whole other way of calling you on to higher levels of generosity with your life, right? Marriage is a school of self-giving, where you are going to be called to deny yourself. You're going to be called to set aside your preferences to serve something bigger than you. You're going to be called to be patient with someone, to be kind with someone that hurts you, that frustrates you, that annoys you. And it's right there that Jesus is asking, are you going to be a faithful Christian? Are you going to love me? Are you going to love me in the midst of this messiness? Because marriage is good, but it's messy. And what we do is we tend to run away from that messiness. We run away in many different ways. We can run away just in our heads going, that's the third time he didn't say thank you. Or she just doesn't understand. He's never going to change. That's one way we run away from the messiness. We get all these thoughts in our head and we start building up these walls in our marriage. Do you think, who's putting those thoughts in your head? Is that coming from God? That's coming from the enemy who wants to divide the profound bond that exists between you and your spouse. And he'll put all those thoughts in your head. What do you do at that moment? You're going to run away from that messiness? You know, another thing we do to run away from the messiness, we could just start kind of like just getting busy with our own lives. I'm just going to go work out in the yard. I'm just get interested in my own hobbies. And I have to deal with this person, but I'll just try not to bother them too much so they don't bother me too much. And we start living parallel lives in our marriage. That's another way we run away from the messiness. And then sadly, some people run away from it altogether and they leave their spouse. We're not called to run away. Jesus wants to meet us right there. This is actually the great drama of our lives. How do I deal with the messiness? And it's important to remember three things about marriage. I'm going to do real basic catechesis with you, and then we're going to get to a lot of fun stuff on practicality here. A lot of fun stories with this. But first of all, this little basic catechesis. Three amazing things happen when a husband and wife come together in the sacrament of holy matrimony. Three amazing things. Do you know the three amazing things that happen? I wish that priests would just talk about these things and talk about them, not just at a wedding ceremony, but throughout the year to remind the couples in the parish about these three amazing things that happen in a marriage. First of all, when a man and woman come together in this sacrament, there is a bond that comes into existence. Their relationship is changed. Something new is brought into existence that did not exist before. Yes, they knew each other. Yes, they were friends. Yes, they loved each other, boyfriend and girlfriend, fiancés. But now there is a bond. They are united together, bonded by Christ. That is new. They had a lot of warm feelings and a lot of commitment there, but something outside has come in to bond them together. There was a bond. Second thing, husband and wife become a sign. They become a sign. Did you know that we become a sign? The love of a husband and wife becomes a sign of Christ's love for the church. And what we're seeing is that when we see Jesus' love for the church, Jesus gave himself. He gave himself totally in sacrificial love. That's what real love is. And so I should every day ask Jesus, how is my marriage? Are we a sign of your heroic love, your unconditional love for us? We who are a part of the church who often fail and have so many weaknesses and so many infidelities, so many ways we let you down, so many ways we fail, Lord, you love us completely. You even died for us. That is such an amazing love. That's true marriage. Our little marriages participate in that. How well am I doing? Man, when my spouse bugs me, I run away. When my spouse bugs me, I snap back at her. When my spouse bugs me, I get all discouraged. I need to be more like Jesus. And I'm going to love through the midst of this challenge we're facing. So there's a bond. We become a sign of Christ's love. And here's the most important thing. There is a font of grace available. Did you know that? Did you know that the sacrament of matrimony didn't just happen on this day? But as a result of that union when you came up to the altar on your wedding day, there is a font of grace available for you. If I could tell you that there is this amazing power that you can tap into to help you overcome that impatience, that anger, that disappointment, that discouragement, that you could tap into a power that's going to help you love your spouse in a way you can't on your own, wouldn't you want to use it? And yes, if you've been married in the Catholic Church, you've got that. You've got this power of grace. So in those moments, say, Jesus, help me through the grace of my matrimony, through the grace of my marriage. Help us through this difficulty. Through the grace of this marriage, help me to serve more, Jesus. Through the grace of our marriage, help me to be more thoughtful. I'm just not thoughtful enough for my spouse. I'm thinking too much about my stuff all the time. Do you draw on the grace? There's a rich resource there that could transform our marriages, and many of us aren't even aware of it. So three things. New bond brought into existence. Something new is there between the man and the woman. They are supposed to be a sign of Christ's love, sacrificial love for his church. And there's this great font of grace. Okay, now, with that, can we get to the fun stuff now? You all ready? Who's ready for the fun stuff? Okay, I'm going to say something really controversial here, though. And I'm a little nervous. So if Sean or Father throws me out, I'll understand, because it's pretty countercultural. But I'm convinced of this. And JP2 says the same thing, so he's on my side. Okay, ready? Men and women are different. I know that's really radical. I know what the feminists think of all that, but men and women are different, right? And let's talk about those differences. You know, sometimes the differences that a husband and wife may have nothing to do with being man or woman. It just might have to do with the way they're raised. I want to talk about those first. Then we'll talk about the difference between men and women. But I remember there was a couple, actually, I remember on the Rome pilgrimage, there was a couple, there was a woman, she was a focus missionary, and she came on my Rome pilgrimage ages ago, and then came again a few years ago. And we got to, part of the adventure is we always get to the front row for the papal audience. Every year we do this, and when you get there, you have like 2 hours to wait before the Pope comes out. So we're there at the front row, and I was just catching up with her, and I was working on a project about marriage, a marriage program called Beloved that's on Formed. I know many of you in the parish are using that. But I was asking her, so we're working on this project, tell me, and I was asking her and a couple other couples, tell me about your first few years of marriage. She'd been married about 6 years. She had 2 or 3 kids at the time. So tell me about marriage. And she just was like, no one ever tells you just how hard marriage really is. No one ever tells you just how hard marriage really is. And she says, you know, you got two different people coming together from two different backgrounds, and they're thrown together, and it's just really hard. It reminds me of a story, a true story. A friend of mine who got married, he was on his wedding day, and he's in the back in the sacristy here, and, you know, the bride and the bridesmaids are all in the back of the church, but he's here all by himself waiting for the wedding ceremony to begin, and then the best man goes and walks in. He sees my friend. So the best man walks in, sees my friend, just looks at him, points, and starts laughing. And starts walking away. And my friend looked at him and says, why are you laughing? What's that all about? And then my friend, the other guy who happened to be married for many years, says, that's just it. You don't know. You don't know what you're getting into. And there's great marriage prep programs out there, and I hope they do good things, but no, not even the best marriage prep can truly prepare you for what you're getting into. We need marriage formation. If we got rid of marriage prep, but required mandatory marriage formation for the first 5 or 7 years of marriage, I think that would be better. Hypothetically, I don't know. You're recording me. I don't know for sure. Sorry. I'm with Pope Francis. We need marriage prep. Just want to make sure that's clear in video. I've been involved in marriage prep programs. I wrote a book for marriage prep. I'm all for marriage prep. I'm using hyperbole here. Okay. But that being said, if we do all this marriage prep and then it's like, good luck now, see you later, that's not going to work. Because you really need help a couple years into it, right? A couple years, a couple kids, you're exhausted, you're dying, you're trying to figure it out. I need help now. We don't do enough for marriage formation. Let's talk about this, though, the differences, though. You know, two different people. You know, sometimes, like, just being raised differently. A friend of mine, he came from a very quiet, introverted family, and he married a very loud, extroverted Irish girl. and their marriage in the first several years was really rough going. It was really rough going, you know, like, because, you know, she grew up in a home where people would yell at each other. They were just very loud. And then, like, 10 seconds later, they're hugging and kissing each other. And everything's fine. This, you know, everything's just out on the table. You just, all the emotions, you get it all out there. And it could be really tense. And then 30 seconds later, everyone's, like, having a great time. That's just the way their family was. His family was the opposite. His family sat at the dinner table. How's the food? Good. Who's going to win today? Who do you think will win today? I mean, very deferential, just no conflict, right? You never talked about anything you might disagree with, right? And so imagine these two people coming together. So all of a sudden, there's some little problem going on, and she's like, rah! And he's like, ah! Wanting to hide, you know? And he's like wondering, she's just so angry all the time. She hates me. And she's over here wondering, why is he so quiet? How come he's not telling me what's going on inside his head? Doesn't he trust me? And so this caused a lot of challenges in their marriage early on, right? Now, one temptation we have in these periods is we tend to just want to, you know, we can just run away from the messiness, right? And we'll just say, well, this is just the way I am. I'm just loud and expressive. It doesn't mean I hate you. Just deal with it, okay? I don't hate you. This is just the way I am. Or he could have said, well, this is the way I am. I'm really quiet and don't expect me to share too much. And this is just the way I am. And that's what many people do. But Jesus is calling us to change, both of us to change. And that's what started to happen in their marriage. It was a lot of tension early on. But then they realized, you know, like she realized that she needs to tone down her voice, tone down, you know, her expressiveness, knowing how it was affecting him. And he also needed to be more understanding and realize, okay, if she does raise her voice every once in a while, I got to be better at realizing that doesn't mean she hates me. Doesn't mean we're getting a divorce. She's just expressive. And they came in the middle. That's what we need to do in our marriages. You know, too often, you know, in our marriages, you know what we do? You know, we go into our marriages just, you know, thinking this is just wonderful. This person's so wonderful. Even their dark corners and their weaknesses are still kind of cute. You know, we just overlook all weakness, right? We just think they're just so special. Like, we go into our marriages singing that old Billy Joel song. Remember that Billy Joel song? Don't go changing to try to please me. I love you just the way you are. Isn't that wonderful? You know, I just love you just the way you are. You know, but about 6.5 years into marriage, you're not singing Billy Joel anymore. It's like you're singing Bon Jovi now. You give love a bad name! Yeah, this is the reality of what happens many times, you know. Instead of, you know, we want our spouse to change. We treat our spouse like, you know, like with the remote control commercial. I don't like that show. Change. You know, would you change this? Change this. Instead of looking inward, let's not expect them to change. Jesus, he loved even when the people were not perfect. Do you love your spouse even when he or she's not perfect? Do you love like Christ? You know, there's other differences, you know, different, you have different traditions. It's holiday season, right? So we did things like this for Christmas. Well, I did things like this for Christmas. Different levels of expectation for cleanliness in the house. There's different expectations about money. Do you ever think about that when you go into your marriage thinking, yeah, I heard that people fight about money, but oh, we'll never fight about money. You know, we just love each other, right? I mean, who needs money? We've got love. Yeah. But then you got, you know, there's one personality in the marriage that's, you know, very, you know, the budget, the big B word, right? We got the budget, we got a plan, we got to allocate, got my spreadsheet, okay? And then there's someone that's a little more free-spirited, you know? There's a sale, you know? And they'll drive each other nuts, right? You know, so, you know, maybe the person's a little more free-spirited and he's really, well, we got to make sure we have some money for this free-spiritedness, so we have to have a little bit of planning, and maybe the person with the budget has to learn to have a life too, you know, so we have to kind of come together there a little bit. So those are differences. You know, one really big difference that comes up, the wounds we bring into our marriage. And people don't talk about this that much. My wife has a great heart for this in ministry, and she's really been working with a lot of younger couples as they're getting ready to go into marriage, or sometimes usually like 5 or 10 years into their marriage, stuff comes out that maybe even the husband or wife didn't realize was there. You know, if they came from a dysfunctional family life, they came from overbearing parents, they came from, you know, psychological disorders in their family, alcoholism, divorce in the family. I mean, there's all these studies coming out now showing the effect of divorce on the next generation. And now they're older and they're entering into intimate relationships of their own. And all this insecurity and fears and walls and dysfunction comes up. This is real. Sexual abuse is a huge thing in our world today. And that will affect a marriage. And to pretend that that's just not there is just, again, running away from the messiness. Jesus wants to come and heal us. So if you've gone through anything like this, to go to counseling, you know, in good spiritual direction and adoration is a wonderful thing to do. You know, in the Beloved series, my wife tells a story about how she came from parents of a divorced family. And while she loves both her mom and dad, at the same time, she acknowledges it really affected her and certainly affected us in the beginning of marriage. And she's open about, you know, going to counseling and how helpful that has been for her life. And then good healing through the sacraments and spiritual direction on top of that. Another person on the video talks about how she was abused and younger. And then in their marriage, all of a sudden she's like, I just don't want to do that. And the husband's like, well, that's what you do in marriage. Well, I can't. And she doesn't know why. And then all of a sudden having to deal with it. This is the real stuff. We live in a messed up world. There's a lot of messiness. And the good news is God wants to heal that. He wants to come in the middle of your marriage and bring healing. Don't run away from it. Go seek the help that you need. A lot of other kinds of differences here. So let's talk about men and women now. Men and women differences. This is fun. You know, the Bible says God made us male and female. So we are made differently. And one of the big things John Paul II brings out is how women have this deep, richer emotional life. That they have this capacity to enter into relationships and understand relationships. Doesn't mean men don't have this. I don't want to stereotype this, but I just see this in my own life, you know. Like when there's a problem in the home, something's going on, kids are fighting or something's going on, I'm like, okay, work mode, I'm going to solve this problem here. We just do this and you come over here and apologize. And then my wife just kind of like, I don't know, she's got this mommy nose. You know, I don't know, she just smells something. She goes, hey, Ted, come over here. I think he may be feeling a little more hurt just because something happened at school today. I wonder if you just go read him a story, I think it'll just be fine. I'm like, how does she know that? But there's a great gift that she brings, you know. But many times, I just want to come in and just solve the problem. And that oftentimes, as we know as men, doesn't work out as well. But, you know, one big thing about the emotional life, you know, is because women have this deeper, richer emotional life, they have a greater ability to understand and enter into relationships. They also have a greater need to connect with others. And I'm convinced of this. I have led in Focus. I don't know if you're all familiar with Focus. That's the organization that does evangelization on college campuses in the United States. It's kind of like CCO in Canada. And at least in Focus in the States, there's men's Bible studies and women's Bible studies. And sometimes they bring them all together, but usually it's just men and women separated. But when it all got started, and I was there at the beginning, it's kind of like Adam and Eve, you just had to start. So, you know, so I'm like the one guy in Focus in their 20-year history to lead women's Bible studies. So one night I'm leading the men, and the next night I'm leading the women, because we just had to get started, right? And I can tell you, Bible study was so different on those two nights. I'm with the guys. They pull out their Bibles, they got their pens, they're taking notes, they're analyzing the text. What does it mean, you know? The girls, sometimes they open their Bibles. They just wanted to talk and just share and talk and all. I was like, whoa, you know, and I see that, you know, in my own family life here. You know, I see that, you know, when I'm at work, my job is talking all day, you know, there's some studies, and this isn't scientific, but I came across this once years ago that said men have a need to speak about 12,000 words a day. And again, I don't want to stereotype, but in general, say men have a need to speak about 12,000 words a day to feel like they connected with people. Women have a need for about 24,000 words a day, according to this one study from ages ago. So I'm not trying to be scientific, but just to make the point, I'm at work all day. My job is talking, teaching, and I'm in meetings all day long. So when I'm driving home and I'm about to enter that door, I'm at 11,998. And here's my wife, who's been at home with the little kids all day, reading Curious George books, zero adult conversation most of the day. She sees me and she's like, oh, Adult conversation time! Hey, honey, how was your day? Good, 11,999? How'd that meeting go? It went well, 12,002. And I just want to go to my cave. I need to relax. I need to kind of unwind a bit. Then I can come out and reconnect and all. But I've come to realize conversation is not about me. It's not about what I want, what I need. My wife needs to connect. And so she needs me to enter into conversation with her. And she needs to be listened to, right? So early on in our marriage, I figured this out, finally. And so I figured, okay, I'll just ask her a lot of questions so that she can talk. And I don't have to exceed my limit. This is great. And that was helpful. That was a good step forward. But then I realized that she wanted more. She didn't want to just talk. She wanted me to share. And I'm not the sharing kind of guy, I guess. I don't know. But I just realized, you know what? It's not about me. I got to enter in. I got to share things from my day, how things are going. And that's helpful there. John Paul II said, women have a greater right to this kind of connection from their husbands. It says that, you know, many women, because first of all, they're just wired this way, right? They have a greater need for this kind of connection. And we as men don't get that. And so we have to go out of our way to give more than what we think they really need in terms of our time, our attention, our conversation with them. But he also says women go through many changes all throughout their lives, from marriage to motherhood, and it's really hard. You know, they're all of a sudden married, and now they're having a baby, or this is, they're pregnant, and I mean, and there's just a lot of physical changes going on, life changes going on. I remember my wife, you know, that first trimester with our first baby, she's just on that couch all the time. And she's asleep. And I knew women got tired, but I couldn't, she's like, nothing's getting done at the house. She's just sleeping all the time. I remember calling one of my married guy friends going, is she just being lazy? I mean, come on, what's going on here? Because I just was clueless. I didn't know. You know, and then finally, okay, we get through, you know, middle trimester is a little better now. Things are okay. Then the last trimester, oh, she's just feeling awful. You know, and then delivery day, and I saw all of the pain that she's going through. I'm like, oh, my goodness, I love you, honey. I could never do that. And then I thought, okay, whew, okay, I'm holding my baby. We're going home now. Life's going to get easier again. We're through the hard stuff now, right? Well, all of a sudden, we get home, and it's all of a sudden the stress of, okay, I got to change a diaper. I don't know how to change a diaper. Okay, is the baby breathing? Is the baby breathing? Okay, what's a onesie? I don't understand. What's a onesie? Okay. And then my wife is still, you know, she's exhausted. And then there was this whole other thing that came a few days later after the baby came out. No one ever prepared me for this. This whole thing called engorgement. Oh, my goodness, engorgement? Oh, my goodness. I mean, I just saw my wife in tears and all this pain, and there's machines, and I was like, oh, what is going on here? You know, but so women are going through a lot of change, a lot of difficult experiences. They already have a need to connect. They really need us to connect, you know, in these years after having a baby. And really, like a whole, it takes a body. My wife runs marathons, and it takes like 9 months to recover from a marathon, and she says the same thing with pregnancy. You know, like after a pregnancy, it takes like at least 9 months to your body to get back to where it was before. And so they need our care and attention. And I want to just stress this a little bit more because another thing John Paul II brings out, this idea that men and women are different, right? So women have this need for their spouse, their husband, to connect with them because they have a deeper, richer emotional life. John Paul II says men have a deeper, richer sensual life. It doesn't mean that men don't have emotions, and it doesn't mean that women don't have sensual desire. It's just that it's more pronounced, the sensual desire is more pronounced in a man, and the emotional need is more pronounced in the woman. That's all. But here's the thing, gentlemen, I want to just say this, you know, because we could be thinking, you know, I spent time with her. I mean, I stood in the kitchen and talked to her for 7 minutes. I mean, I just gave her, I asked her about her day. I shared a couple things. I asked her about the kids. I asked her what I could do for help. I connected! And we just, again, we're not wired the way they are. So we think that we can, but they have a much deeper need for connection. And guys, it's kind of like this. It's like just as our wives oftentimes don't understand why we want to keep doing this all the time. You're like, hey, what do you think about intimacy? Didn't we do that last month? You're like, they're like, well, why do we need this? You know, as much, you know, because we're just wired differently. So use your own experience and think, if I thought I connected, she probably just needs a lot more than I was even imagining. All right, last thing about bringing these two together, the sensual closeness and that emotional closeness. This is something beautiful from JP 2 in Theology of the Body, is that they're really meant to be intertwined. That, you know, Theology of the Body teaches that when the couple comes together in this physical act of intimacy, the physical joining of their bodies is meant to be an expression of total self-giving. In giving their bodies to each other, they're giving themselves to each other. It's like a spiritual union, not just a physical union. It's not just about sexual release. It's not just about the pleasure. But it's expressing this intimate connection, heart to heart, that exists between a husband and wife, or should exist. And so if we give a lot in the emotional connection, and we invest in that as husband and wife, then when we go to the marital bed, then that physical act is actually expressing something that already exists. We're just expressing it physically. What exists between us heart to heart, we're really close together, is now being expressed physically, and it's beautiful. We know from experience that there's times where we could just go through this physical thing, but there wasn't the emotional heart to heart connection, and then the physical thing in and of itself isn't as great as it could be. John Paul II says, let's make sure we bring the genius of the man and the woman together, the heart and the physical together. Amen? All right, one last thought here. Differences between men and women. You know, when I on this Rome pilgrimage, when we were working on this marriage prep program, I was asking all these couples all about marriage, and this one, I remember sitting around the dinner table, and this theme kept coming up over and over again, where many women were complaining about their husbands and saying, you know, I just wish he understood. You know, I wish... I remember, like, different women said basically the same thing. I wish he could read my mind. You know, in other words, they expect the man to know what's going on, how she's feeling, when she's in a certain mood, what are her needs, what does she want. And there was this desire, I wish he would just know. And there was frustration there. But I have to say to those ladies, and I'm going to say it to the ladies here, you may feel that way. I wish my husband just knew. I wish he could read my mind. And I want to tell you, that's not fair. You can't expect us men to be mind readers. You need to just sometimes just tell us. I know it would be ideal if we figured it out on our own. I recognize that. But you have to just understand, ladies, we're clueless. We're clueless. We're not as gifted relationally as you are. God did not make us that way. It's not that we don't love you. It's not that we don't want to do the right thing. We just need your help. Just tell me what to do. You know, I'll tell you a fun story. My wife, you ever hear that book about the love languages, the five love languages? It says, like, there are ways that you express love and ways you like, and it often relates to how you like to receive love. So there's different things like words of praise or physical touch or special one-on-one time together. There's different ways people like to express love. One, my wife's love language off the charts is gift giving. She loves gift giving. She's the person that thinks about every person and what would be just the perfect gift. She gets so excited about it, packages it up. She's so excited about gift giving. I'm the exact opposite. I'm the guy that when I was single, this is my strategy every December. I did not think about gift giving at all until like about 8 a.m. on December 24th. And I would get up, and I love people, and I made a list of all the people I want to buy a gift for, and I thought about the things I was going to go get. And my whole point was I'm going to be as efficient as possible and not spend more than one day out at the mall. And I get it all done. My poor wife has suffered so much in our marriage because she did not marry a gift giver. But one year, I was so excited. Because I wanted to not just go get her like something, a kitchen item again. I learned that she didn't want to. I thought, well, you're in the kitchen. I thought you'd like this. So I was trying to be more thoughtful, like what's something, you know, that she likes. And on Sundays, we do a big brunch together, and we often will make pancakes. And I noticed that she would bring out like the store-bought syrup and set it out for all the kids. But then she went to the special cupboard up high, and she got this small thing of maple syrup, and she put it by her plate, and it was just hers. I didn't know what it was. But it was a higher end maple syrup that I knew she really liked maple syrup. Now, I wasn't coming to Canada. That would have been a great place to go. But I was in Vermont giving a talk right before her birthday, the day before her birthday. And I knew I was going to be in Vermont. And so while I was in Vermont, I got this special high-end Vermont-level maple syrup for her. And I wanted to play a nice joke on her. You know, we're getting all the, you know, all the brunch ready, and it's a Sunday brunch, and it's her birthday brunch, and all the kids are bringing her little gifts. And I'm kind of like all excited and just pretending like I forgot. And she's like, I could tell she's wondering, he forgot, didn't he? And then, you know, at the end of everyone, she's looking at me, and I go, I got something for you. And I pull out this big, you know, gift bag with the ribbons and things. And then she opens it up, and she pulls it up, and she sees maple syrup. Maple syrup. And she's kind of looking inside. And she's like, is this one of your jokes? I go, oh, no, honey, I noticed you like maple syrup. And she goes, but this is maple syrup. And I go, well, no, that little jar up in the can, I noticed that you bring it down. And finally, I was observing something you really liked. And I went out of my way to get you this maple syrup from Vermont. And she goes, but I'm your wife. You're getting maple syrup for your wife for birthday? Are you kidding me? And I look at her and I go, you don't like it, honey? She goes, but I'm your wife. I can't believe you just did this. I go, oh, honey, if you don't like this, I feel really bad because there's 6 big jugs coming in the mail. See, ladies, we're clueless. We just need a little help. You know, later that year, she and I had to go to the store together, and we were picking up something, and then we happened to walk by this set of purses, and all of a sudden she just stopped. She goes, oh, Ted, do you see these purses here? Those are really nice purses. That would just be a great purse to have. And then just walks away. I pull out my phone, took a picture, and I got her the great Mother's Day gift that year. But in all honesty, I did succeed once. There was one time I did it really well. When we were going to release our marriage program, we released it in Rome. And so the professors from our school were at the Augustine Institute were going to go to Rome. And then we realized it'd be really silly to have about 4 guys release a marriage program. So we should get our spouses to come. And so Beth knew she was going to go to Rome. But then I surprised her for Christmas and said, before we go to Rome, we're going to spend 4 days in London doing a Jane Austen pilgrimage. She's a huge Jane Austen fan, and I scoped it all out where we're going to go. So I scored, and I hope that carries me over for the next 10 years. So, well, my friends, it's so fun to be with all of you. All that I'm sharing with you, like various insights, are based off of JP2's insights that I try to summarize in this book here, Men, Women, the Mystery of Love. So whether you're someone that's been married 10, 20, 30 years, I've had people tell me they find a lot of insights into this. I know so many young adult single people that are using this to navigate their dating relationships, to understand what authentic love is. For young married couples, if you know someone getting ready to be married or recently married, this could be a great resource for them. That's what I'm going to be talking about tomorrow on The Secular Culture, Who Am I to Judge? In this book on Symbolon. Are you all familiar with Symbolon? So that's the book, Love Unveiled, is the Symbolon book. So I'm going to be talking about that, how we engage our culture. We did that earlier there, and that's how you can stay in touch with me.